pushing the setting sun back up into the sky. Jack Flaherty looks like he's taken, I don't want to say a step back, but he's not as effective as he was last year as a rookie. They need a front-line horse as badly as anybody, because they're stuck in the mud with the Cubs and Brewers, as none of those teams has really differentiated itself from the rest of the pack. And if Bumgarner or Bauer go to that division, and St. Louis is where I think they have the best chance of landing one of them, that team automatically becomes the favorite to win it.
That was spoken like a lifelong Oakland A's fan, by the way, where you say no way is he going to take that paddle boat across the bay.
Yeah, I just don't see it happening. You know, I looked into this as an exercise. The last trade between the Giants and A's was 26 or 28 years ago. It didn't really move the needle. It was Ernie Riles jumping from one uniform to the next. In terms of a high-impact, high-profile star drop the newspaper trade, you got to go back to 1978 when the A's sent Vida Blue to the Giants.
Right.
In exchange for a large handful of players, a few of whom turned out to be really good major league players. That wasn't a terrible deal, but that just doesn't happen anymore. I mean, the Yankees and Mets are unlikely to ever consummate a high-profile deal. Really weird when the White Sox and Cubs did one for Eloy Jimenez and Quintana a couple of years ago. Those just don't happen in the same market very often.
Yeah, Matt, do you think that Farhan being a Billy disciple opens the greases the skids at all for a possibility?
That's an intriguing thing to think about, but he's a pragmatist, and I just don't see he's very aware of his current lot in life, and I don't think there's any old home week celebrations that'll be made by picking up the phone call and saying, "Hey, Billy, do you want the best postseason pitcher in history?" I don't think that's going to happen.
You brought up Bochy earlier, and obviously what he's meant up here, and you and I go a little bit further back from our days together, Matty V in San Diego with him. So I think that we are partial. I think if we're being honest, you know, we're not as objective as others might be, or as you would want Farhan Zaidi to be. But does that factor in at all in what he's meant here? You know, that you would like to see him go out romantically on this high note. You know, like we all love that potential storyline here. For you, do you think it factors in at all, or is this have to be cold, calculated, and what is in the best interest, the long-term best interest of the Giants?
Yeah, I mean, you could talk yourself into both sides of that, but I think this. I think that Farhan, while he is a pretty objective, analytical guy, would also succumb to the human element when it's necessary. And I think I haven't spent a lot of time speaking to him about this kind of thing. Obviously, I don't know him that well at all. But from what I've gathered, he kind of pushes back at the suggestion that he analyzes things like the computer HAL from 2010. I don't think he processes the world quite like that, even though a lot of fans have assigned to him that kind of dimension. I think he does value the fact that there would be kind of an unspoken, hard-to-quantify competitive advantage rallying around a senior statesman like Boch in what's announced to be his final year, who's beloved in the clubhouse. I think he does value that. He's not going to sell the farm because of it, but if all things were equal, I think he'd probably nod his cap to that.
Matt Vasgersian, friend of every Bay Area baseball fan. Go ahead and survive that heat dome if you can, Matt, and get back to us in California sometime soon.
Yeah, hey, Damon, not a friend of those on Twitter who were hacked off at the suggestion that the winning streak was a bad thing for the Giants the other day. A lot of people were hacked off at me for that.
How do you know that?
Wait. I thought you were
a
Twitter-free existence.
Good question, because I'm not on Twitter, but everybody I work with is. And when you walk into a production meeting and there's some millennial on his phone going, "Ha, the people in San Francisco really hate you," you're like, what am I missing? This is why I'm not on Twitter. I got enough detractors. I got enough things to worry about. I can't get involved.
Hashtag Vasgersian sucks. Thank you, buddy. Hashtag Vasgersian sucks. We could probably get that trending. Let's not do that. Although, how would he know? Not on Twitter. The millennial will report to him. We don't want that. We do want an update, though, from Elena. And when we come on back, we're going to flip the keys to Darren for the rest of the show. What the hell? Let's drive home together. Here on 95.7 The Game, Elena, hello!
Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
So it's really good to have everyone back here. It's been great having Darren Smith in this week. If you couldn't tell, Darren and I have known each other for a really, really long time. That's why I think you have heard a week go very smoothly for two guys who grew up behind microphones as solo acts. I didn't have any co-hosts for the better part of, 13, 14 years on the air, and it wasn't until recently where Ray Ratto and Matt Kolsky have been joining me, and I got to tell you, it's a whole different way to do a show. It's fun. It's conversational. People have been responding to it, and I've really, really enjoyed it. But I'll always, in my heart of hearts, miss my solo host days. And Darren was waxing.
Is that right?
Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah. Well, I always used to say when I was a kid, I never wanted to be a broadcaster's. You know, I just wanted to do it myself. One man, one mic, one mission, one message. I thought that was the most powerful thing in media. And that's what I wanted, like the old Paul Harvey route. And then, your wife is pregnant and you're like, let's go ahead and just talk sports and not nearly attach as much as our own ego to the shows we used to. And it's just the ego starts dissolving around, shows that are good. And like I said, I've been having fun with Matt and Ray. You been on the beach for a little while. You got to be Rich Eisen before you came up here and hanging out with us all week. And I asked Darren, hey, is it fun to be back on the air after a little hiatus? And he's like, yeah, it really is. The only thing that's weird about it is that I'm not in the A chair. Now, little broadcasting jargon for you, the A chair, the B chair. Well, the guy bringing you in and out of commercial breaks, that's the A chair. Everyone else is kind of in the studio. So in the name of making you feel as comfortable and at home as possible, Darren, until we leave at 6 o'clock tonight, you're driving.
That's
it. You wanted the A chair? You got it, buddy.
Man, all right. Well, I feel like you just sort of tossed me the keys here. I don't know if, sometimes you're thrust into the driving position here because the other person had a little too much to drink.
Right.
And that's sort of this situation here where I'm not taking the keys from you, but you're saying, hey, you take the keys, you drive for a little bit.
So the only thing better than having a pregnant wife in your life would be like having a permanent Uber driver in your life, because that's what your pregnant wife becomes.
Right.
She is the ultimate designated driver. So you are basically now the designated driver or the pregnant wife of the Damon Bruce Show the rest of the way.
Well,
congratulations.
I must say, I just really enjoyed being able to ride the coattails of the great Damon Bruce here for a couple of days. And I'm going to embarrass him for just one brief second, because yesterday we left the radio studio here. We left 95.7 The Game. And it's pretty, I think everybody knows where the station is. You guys don't keep this a secret. This is in Area 51 or something along
right,
those
Broadway
lines.
Broadway and Battery.
Yeah, and it's right there for everybody to look up with their own personal Google machines. And we drove down towards China Basin to go to the game last night. And I will say, I was so impressed, and I know you were as well, and this never, ever, ever gets tired, where fans of the show look at you, and then they look at you again, and we met this couple, and I thought that this was great. After all these years, Oracle opened what year? Was it 2000? And it was about almost going on 20 years.
It was 2001?
And we met a couple, a Bay Area couple last night. We met a husband and a wife who had recently been married, who were going to their very first game at Oracle.
Right.
Think about that, and big-time Warriors fan, long-time listener, and you ask, like, what is it? Like, why are you here tonight? I thought attendance, we talked a little bit, would there be a spike? Because the team had played well, because it was potentially Bumgarner's last start. Averaging about 32 on the season, 32 grand at Oracle,
which is fair. It was a good crowd last night, considering what crowds have looked like ahead of last night.
Over 36, but I love the couple that we met, and you remember, he was wearing a Warriors hat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the couple that we met going to the game for the very first time at Oracle. Like that blew me away that this is a lifelong Bay Area couple going for the first time. And you said, well, why tonight? Like, what is it about this Thursday? And remember what they said? Some of it's Bumgarner. They just wanted to come and they wanted to see Bumgarner in that park one time, potentially, before he might get traded and off to another club he goes.
It was, look, people want to hear and see the legend and participate in the moment and say that they were there and whatnot. And it was cool to meet him. And the most flattering thing there is as a host, the closest you ever get to feeling like Mick Jagger is when someone recognizes your voice. What's crazy, and it's a compliment to the station and mm-hmm. the success that we've been having, is I used to get recognized vocally in sporting situations, which totally made sense because them's my people. Or like I'll get into an Uber and they'll see they're going to pick up Damon Bruce and I'll be like, hi, how you doing? And they'll instantly say like, oh, it is you. And like that happens more often than not. What's really weird is when it happens outside of sports or sporting environments. That's what's nuts. And the single craziest was I was in Las Vegas once making a bet and the guy behind me was like, oh, Damon, that's a bad bet. You know, like he knew exactly who I was, and we were in another state.
So another Bay Area guy, somewhere in a casino, and he's giving you gambling advice because he recognizes your voice. And isn't the best part of that? Because it's the day and age of the internet now where everything's visual anyway. You guys have cameras in here. We all have Twitter pages. But isn't it the best when somebody knows they know your voice, but they're not exactly sure why, and they're like, I know that voice, but I don't know why it is.
Familiar, can't place it.
Sound right. Is Vegas the most random place for you?
Yeah, I think so.
How about this? The jungles of Panama.
Really?
I found listeners of the radio station in San Diego. The jungles of Panama, the most random beach you ever could have found in your life. I believe it was called Red Frog Beach, off in these islands off Panama on the Caribbean side, and we had listeners down there. So radio's a great, great medium. But I love that last night. I remember that couple just walking into the park because they wanted to see this. But one time before Bumgarner potentially gets traded.
What's the old DiMaggio line? I play hard every day because I never know when it's going to be someone's last time ever seeing me or someone's first time ever seeing me. So I want to leave them with a good impression.
Yep.
Bumgarner left them with a good impression. They got their money's worth. How about this? If it's your first ever game, do you think they stayed all 16 innings?
Oh, my gosh. What's the longest game that you've ever stayed at? I mean, what your level of commitment now, as you said, you were getting a text, a couple of texts from Jillian, like, so, what's going on? And you took that as your cue that maybe it was time for me to
head home. When your pregnant wife sends you a text because she knows you're at a baseball game, not exactly work, you know, it's not God's work that you're doing. But Jillian texted me last night, when are you coming home? Which is pregnant speak for it's time to come home. So I did.
You did.
Yeah.
What's the longest that you've ever lasted, though, at a game?
I mean, as a fan?
Mm-hmm.
I never left a game early, not once had I ever bought a ticket. The only time I've ever walked out of a game early ever in my life would be a credential hanging around my neck. I have never left a game early as a fan.
Ever as a fan.
Ever.
Extra inning game, boring game, blowout, always stay until the final whistle, to the final out.
Always in baseball, I think I've walked out of a couple fourth quarters of lopsided football games in my life. Certainly at IU.
Mm-hmm.
But baseball, I was pretty adamant about staying for the whole thing. Like, I was that guy back in the day. 16 innings would have pushed me. I don't think I ever went to a 16-inning game as a fan. I can't think of the longest game. How about this? In my entire baseball existence, the only time, the amount of time this game lasted that ever bothered me was when I was hosting post-game shows and, like, I'm technically at work and I would like to start my evening now. I'd like to get to broadcasting. I'd like to start this post-game show. So it's not a blip of a post-game show and I sat in here for 5 hours to do a 25-minute post-game show. Like, that would drive me nuts, and that would, when a game going long, would bother me. I never understood why, you know, like, I've never been in a baseball stadium and thought, get me out of here. Like,
four
I got
hours,
things to do.
4.5. Well, listen, this is an interesting point because we're the day after a 16-inning game, and we talked a little bit about Bumgarner earlier and the at-bat and whether that went against what the data would have suggested. But Bochy saying we might have a moment here with Yastrzemski at third and one out in this game for Bumgarner to potentially drive in the winning run and throw a complete game against the Mets and potentially his final start. But let me ask you, because this came up a little bit in the conversation I was having last night about baseball. That game was flying. That was a well-pitched game. They were cruising.
Yeah.
If that had ended in 9, that was looking at like 215, 220, somewhere in that range. But there's been a lot of chatter about, hey, you can't keep these players out there forever. 16 innings, 18 innings, 20 innings. I once was at a 22-inning game, which is crazy. What do you think of the idea that baseball's tinkered with now, putting runners at second base in some inning, 10 inning, 11 inning, 12 innings, putting a runner at second base? Some of the ideas just that you don't play this game in potential perpetuity. What do you think of some of the ideas that have been out there that you jimmy rig the sport a little bit differently once you start getting to a certain inning in extra innings, be it the 11th or 12th or whatever?
I understand it. but I don't like it because I'm enough of an old-fashioned guy that thinks there's no hurry here. Like, it's a pastime. It helps us pass the time.
Yes. That's literally what the phrase means.
Right.
It helps you pass the time of the summer.
So I never had this urgency to get it over and done with quickly. When it comes to having a more dramatic ending, all right, like, I get it. At the same time, you know, I watched the Giants have two leadoff triples that they stranded last night. Like, we didn't have to go to extras if any sort of fundamental baseball might have been put in play in the subsequent at-bats, but that didn't happen. I don't know if putting a runner on second would make it better until this happened.
And Solano is going to step up. Base hit! And this game is over! And they just keep on doing it.
Kipe with the call last night, finally got the runner over from second. No, Darren, sorry. It's just, can't we tweak the sport without changing its fundamental nature? Again, how did the runner reach second base? How did mystery runner get there? How do we document that? How do I put that down in my scorebook? 11th inning second base courtesy? Like, how do I score that at home?
Well, yeah, who's still scoring at home?
Phantom runner? Phantom? Ghost runners?
Or as our friend Tony Bruno used to say, since we both have a mutual friend in Tony Bruno,
oh, yes,
for those scoring at home, and if you are, good job out of you. But how do you score? Do people even still do that? Do people still score games outside of broadcasters? I'm sure a handful of people do. I'm okay with it. I'm open-minded to it. I'm open-minded to the idea, but ultimately I think that baseball moves very, very slowly. The powers that be, the people who play it, they move very, very slowly. And last night, I've been on record a million times in my life saying that I'm in favor of the universal DH. Last night would be one of those counter-arguments where I said, okay, I don't have a retort to that because I really thought one of the most dramatic moments of the game came in the bottom of the seventh inning with Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I am anti-universal DH. I am not going to sit here and make a single argument how you need to watch another pitcher hit, but I like the differences in the leagues. I really do. The game of baseball is asymmetrical everywhere. Everywhere from the field of play to how rosters are constructed. I don't need symmetry in both the leagues. I know people really want it. I never really wanted it. I got a guy in the text line saying, the only thing that got me to leave games early were little kids and fairy schedules. Yeah, and if you got to get Bart,
yeah,
you had to get out early last night. Was last Bart stopped running like 12:30 or something?
The people I was with, I think 11:30-ish, somewhere in that range. They had to worry about that. If every pitcher took it as seriously as Madison Bumgarner and gave that kind of effort, then I would be a lot more inclined to say, okay, I don't think that this is a subject that we really, this isn't a conversation that we need to have. But the problem is none of these pitchers hit in the lower levels. And some of them hit in the highest level in AAA if they're with one of the clubs where they might be expected to do it. And they just don't take it seriously. And they're all a bunch of rotten hitters. Madison Bumgarner, let's not confuse him with a good hitter. He's just a good hitter.
As a pitcher.
He takes it seriously and works at it and tries at it, I think, makes the case. But these guys, they can't run the bases for the most part. They can't hit a lick. They're the weakest hitters.
Like, of all the hitting pitchers I've ever seen, I don't think I ever saw anyone better than Carlos Zambrano.
Oh, yeah. I thought he should have contributed in the home run derby.
Carlos Zambrano could poke it a little bit, and he was like a solid contact at bat, too. Like, he'd foul off a ton of pitches. He was good. He could have hit seventh, you know, I mean, really in the lineup when he was going. If you want to get kinky with your lineup, go full Tony La Russa, you know, hit your pitcher eighth. Like, you could have done that with Zambrano.
Yeah, and, well, we've seen even Bumgarner. Hasn't he pinch hit a handful of times in his career, too, where Boch had absolutely no apprehension sending him to the plate in a big spot?
Carlos Zambrano hit Madison Bumgarner in the pitcher's spot in an American League ballpark. He had Bumgarner basically DH.
Right. Yeah, I mean, again, that's the argument for, but those guys are total outliers. For the most part, they're not taking it all that seriously. They're not taking it seriously at all. Now, I might be in the one here, but you're also in charge of the sound. And the Bumgarner commentary afterwards, number one, give him just a little credit. I'm not suggesting to you that this was the hardest thing in the world to do, to stick with his team and be available afterwards. But a 16-inning game where the pitcher's out after nine.
That's go-home time.
Noah Syndergaard, he didn't stick around last night, and that's often the case with starting pitchers for games that go that length. But how about Bumgarner not only sticking around, but giving you a little bit of gold last night about what's going on with him in the trade rumors?
Are you less worried, less conscious about a trade, given the way the team's playing?
I don't give a Well, I'm here to win games for this team, and that's what we're doing. Yeah.
Madison, that being said, the trade stuff, I mean, at any point tonight, do you take a step back that this is your final homestand, at this, you know, what that moment was like?
No, I'm trying to win games for the Giants, and we're trying to get into the postseason.
I will ask you.
So matter of fact. Like, no, we're just sitting here actually trying to win and get to the postseason. I don't know how anyone could think of it differently.
I don't know if you've noticed, but we're 9-1 in our last 10, and we've crept up the ranking. We've kept up the standings here. I don't know if you've noticed that. You know Bumgarner way more than I do, and we always have to guess a little bit as to what's going on with their psychology. What you heard there, to me, the defiance in his voice, did that sound like a player who wanted to be traded?
No. No. And look, Bumgarner is the real deal. He's here to fight. He's here for the Giants. I mean, this is the only organization he knows. Things have gone very, very well while he's been here. I don't think he wants to walk away from this.
I don't give a I don't give a
Maybe he does. I don't know. No, but look, when he says he doesn't give it,
I don't give a
He doesn't mean about the Giants, the season, the year being lost. That guy has a chip on his shoulder that is a rare commodity in sports these days, and I hope he never removes it. I've always said Draymond Green's best asset is the gargantuan chip on his shoulder that he carries with him everywhere he goes. And players like this are farther and fewer between in the, hey, everybody goes to the same VIP club. Basically, everybody's dating the same six Instagram models. Like, I mean it. Like, these guys who come to work just wanting to beat the opponent, they're harder to find these days.
I know I've talked a lot about Bochy this week, but I also think there's something to Madison Bumgarner wanting to stay with Bochy as long as possible. Right? Yep. You would agree. Like, that's well chronicled, their relationship, how special it is, how much each one means to the other. And I wonder, Bumgarner at some point is going to have to realize that life in Major League Baseball exists without Bruce Bochy, whether that's
and
in
vice
11
versa.
Days or whether that's next season.
Right.
He's going to realize that at some point. But a little of that has to be, hey, this guy's still managing here, and we've done some amazing things here, even though not many people thought we were capable of doing the things that we ended up doing. I have to think that there's a little bit of that as well, that as long as this guy's still managing and still wearing a Giants uniform, then had they decided before the season, Damon, hey, it's a new general manager, it's pretty commonplace for new GMs to bring in their own guy, maybe Bumgarner, hey, I'm ready. I'm mentally prepared for that. Maybe the flip side is, as long as that dude's still here, and as long as that dude's still giving out the signs, and as long as that dude, even afterwards, he tried to talk Bochy into letting him go 10 last night, which at 94 pitches.
Could have happened.
Totally could have happened. Totally could have happened in that spot.
You got a guy like Madison Bumgarner. He's just a true believer through and through. There is no doubt that his loyalty to Bochy is, there's something special there. I think a lot of guys in Madison Bumgarner's situation get to this point in their careers and start looking at greener pasture. I wouldn't blame him, especially as a pitcher for the San Francisco Giants, where run support is like a nightly issue. Greener pasture being available to him and him not running to it or being, you know, creating the illusion that, you know, yeah, man, it's a, you know, the business of baseball is afoot and this, that. But for him to be so stubborn, no, I'm here to win. It's great. It's what fans want to hear. I'm certain what his teammates want to hear. I don't know if it's what Farhan wants to hear.
True.
Can I ask one question to you? And
hey, I'm running the show.
I know you are, but I want to play this, and then I'm going to ask my question. And I think you'll appreciate this question.
Are you less worried, less conscious about a trade, given the way the team's playing?
By the way, don't listen to Bumgarner here.
Are you less worried, less conscious about a trade, given the way the team's playing?
I don't give a Well, I'm here to win games for this team, and that's what we're doing. Yeah.
Madison, that being said, the trade stuff, I mean, at any point tonight, do you take a step back that this is your final homestand, that this, you know, what that moment was like?
No, I'm trying to win games.
Darren, when you were down in San Diego, did you notice that your media
also ask questions like they were at church.
Sheepishly saying, are you less worried?
I really don't understand why everyone in the Bay Area media and press situations around a player at a clubhouse goes to the hushed baby, I'm singing you a lullaby tone in their voice. I really don't understand it. I mean, we're all grown men here, aren't we? We're all grown adults in the room. Everybody here should be able to have a conversation at full volume, for goodness sakes. But there is a hushed reverence to asking questions to professional athletes that I cannot understand.
I like that he put it out there, though, postseason. We're trying to get into the postseason. I don't know how many Giants or when the last time was that a Giant player said
postseason and wasn't
putting
laughed
it out
at.
There. Yeah, I mean, you would not have said that certainly deep into June. I mean, that would be a recent phenomenon after the last couple of weeks, I'm sure, especially for a group of guys as accomplished as they've been in the postseason. Got to love a guy who's willing to go, hey, we're trying to get into the postseason here. Thank you very much. No, I'm not worried about getting traded. I'm trying to pitch this team into the postseason.
On June 21st, the Giants were 32-42 on the year, 18.5 games out of the division, 7 back of the second wild card. Since June 21st, they're 17-7, bringing them to 1 game under 500, 2.5 back of the second wild card. Again, when you're trying to figure out who the Giants are, stop looking at that wild card. Really, stop. Stop looking at that, because everybody in the National League can look at that and determine, are we in it? What really makes the Giants believe, and Madison Bumgarner believe, that he might be in it is watching that run differential from the 21st of June to now July 19th, dropping from minus 92 to minus 37. That's a significant improvement. Like, when you take your SATs, if you can come back in your second SATs and put, 50 points on it, that's significant improvement. That is significant improvement.
And I would say one other thing that improved last night, and maybe it's just because there are a lot of displaced New Yorkers here who are cheering on the Mets, but attendance was up several thousand last night from what the season average was. And as we said, walking in, which is where we began the segment, Damon, we walked in with a couple who is going for the very first time. So maybe there's a little bit of that, maybe the way they played, especially after the last 2.5 years plus. Maybe you noticed that. You noticed Turnstile. And on a Friday night with Jacob deGrom and Tyler Beattie, maybe it's another crowd here on a Friday. That was the significance of last night as well, that you have one of the best pitchers in baseball going for the Mets tonight and deGrom, though they don't win a ton when he's out there on the mound. So getting that first win of the series and rolling it into a big Friday night in the Bay with great weather. I mean,
you can visit World Series. Let's go.
That's it.
Let's go. Let's go. I want another parade up Market Street. I've completely changed my mind. Full buyers. call about Harper. Call about Trout. Who's willing to do business? Let's do it.
You're not. That's not sincere.
It's fun to be in the moment, though. I haven't had a fun baseball moment really all baseball season until like this week. This is good. This is good. It's great to check in on the A's and see what they're doing. When the Giants are getting going in the right direction, the whole city feels differently. It really does. It's the pick-me-up that the town needed this summer.
Well, hey, listen, next week, this is traditionally one of the toughest, as somebody said earlier, hey, what is it, a slow week, when we were talking to our heckler friend.
Yeah, yes,
in the first
hour
of the program. Yeah, we're not shy about that. Everybody all across the country, I give Damon a ton of credit that he's even here, because most people would be like Ratto and Kolsky, and they'd be on vacation. So that's what, this is the time where everybody, I know, because I've done a lot of fill-in work over the last couple of weeks. And as an unemployed guy, the reason I get fill-in work is because people go on vacation. So I want everybody to go on out there before training camp starts opening up, which is 1 week from today. 1 week from today with the 49ers.
Can I be honest? This unborn kid's crushing my lifestyle. Because, yeah, we would have been on vacation without a doubt.
Every summer you go on a big one,
no
don't you?
No doubt.
Now
somewhere
you're all about
middle
the college fun.
Yeah, as soon as it, so it used to be right after the NBA Finals was over. It was like, blow the whistle, everybody out of the pool. Now you got to stick around for at least a couple weeks because free agency and the draft. And, my goodness, we're so used to the Warriors being in the NBA Finals that there was no vacation planning until late June, early July. Now we got August.
And I suspect that there's some more NBA surprises coming, but it does feel even like the busy NBA offseason has hit a little bit of a lull. For the first time since free agency opened up, it does feel like there's just been a little bit of a lull going on in NBA free agency.
So you're either putting a fine point on the point I just made, or you're setting up a transition to go to break. I know how this radio thing works. I bet you we're at break in the next 20 seconds or so. It feels like that's the direction we're being driven in.
Damon, I will manage the clock. Thank you very much. You take the rest of the week off. I've got you covered from here, everybody. Hey, are the 49ers next year's surprise team in the NFL? Well, if you've listened to 95.7 The Game over the week, a lot of the NFL insiders sure think so. And I had one slight disagreement with one thing that one of our insiders said earlier this week on this radio program.
That's a tease, folks.
A little later, we're going to go to the tweets. That'll all be brought to you by Fremont Bank.
Oh,
full service
this.
Banking, no compromises.
The tease, the sponsor, wow.
We'll be back after this on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Damon Bruce Show, 95.7 The Game. No, this is not Damon Bruce.
What was great is that you gave me the eyeballs. Like, are you really doing this? Are we seriously just, yeah, you got the con. You got the con.
I got the con.
Spock, the rest of the way.
Yeah, 888-957-9570, telephone number. Is that the way you say it, or did you just go 9570?
No, I say 888-957-9570, and then to let everyone know what I just said, I say telephone number.
Telephone number, 888-957-9570. That's very, very coincidental that you guys ended up with that number right
like
there.
Like that? Yeah, it's good like deal. We planned yeah. it, right?
Good job. Like you named the radio station after the telephone number that you got. Good job out of you. What are you watching in sports this weekend?
What am I watching
and
sports
again,
this weekend?
Because we've already said, we admit, this is the slowest week of the year
right.
traditionally, which is why everybody goes on vacation. They're not expecting in a couple of weeks.
My eyes will be on both sides of the bay. There's no doubt about it. I am now interested in Giants and A's baseball. Where are we going? So there's very little doubt. Let me see. I'm going to flip over to Saturday. Just make sure I'm not missing a turnover series. Yeah, we got Giants, Mets, and A's at the Twins. I got to be honest with you. What do we got? 1 o'clock and a 4 o'clock. Yay! I don't know about tomorrow, but Sunday, here's what I got. I got Sunday baseball for sure, and I'm hoping I've got a reason to get up early enough in the morning and make myself a cup of coffee and watch, the last nine of the British Open,
That's
if
what
we
I was
actually get
ask.
It. Yeah, if you can get me a halfway decent leaderboard, I'll roll out of bed at 7 a.m. to watch the big boys come in.
You tell me where decent begins on the leaderboard at the Open Championship.
Okay? First of all, where are we? What's the clubhouse leader right now?
We're at 8 under par, J.B. Holmes.
8 under par, J.B. Holmes is not getting me out of bed at 7 a.m. No.
Not flipping on a television Sunday morning to watch J.B. Holmes. All right, Shane Lowry at 8 under par.
Sorry, not even former Giant. Lefty Noah Lowry would have had me out at 7 a.m. No.
A pair of Brits next. Tommy Fleetwood, Lee Westwood.
No and no. Lee Westwood a little bit. Lee Westwood is a name you see on leaderboards on Sundays. So, okay, I've got interest there.
Okay, a little bit, though. But still, if there's an alternative, you're probably going to gravitate towards that instead of this. If anything pops on your radar screen, it's not like Lee Westwood's going to keep you in front of a television.
If Lee Westwood is addressing a ball and getting his waggle down at the same time somebody's in the middle of a no-hitter, I'll be on the no-hitter.
Cameron Smith,
sorry,
Justin
no.
Harding,
no.
Justin Rose.
Now maybe a little.
He's won majors, tied for eighth, Brooks Koepka, Jordan Spieth.
You have my full attention with those two names.
So Brooks Saturday's a big day. Koepka, Spieth to get involved. That might get you out of the rack on a Sunday morning and get you in front of a television with a cup of joe.
Yeah. Are you a golf guy in any way? Are you a player, first of all?
Nah,
do you
I'm
play
terrible.
Golf?
I'm brutal. I have a love-hate relationship with golf. I often have my clubs in my trunk, and then I throw them in storage because I think I'm supposed to be a lot better than I actually am. And this is a weekend where this course has chewed up Tiger Woods and chewed up Phil Mickelson and chewed up Rory McIlroy and has sent Adam Scott home. So some of the bigger names in golf that might get you out of the rack on a weekend for a tournament which requires that you wake up before it's actually light out, those guys have been sent home. And they've all been sent home with their tail between their legs because Tiger even said, like, get me out of here. I got to go home. And Mickelson said, I don't know what happened to my game. I might need to take some time off.
By the way, no wonder why Brooks Koepka is not returning anyone's calls and just ghosting Tiger. He's like, look, this guy's retreating. I'm wasting practice rounds with him.
I don't want to hang out with those losers. I've got other things that I have to do in my life. And Rory McIlroy's opening shot, since this was played in Ireland, and he's from Ireland, hit a woman and broke her cell phone. So that's the way it's gone for some of the biggest names in the sport, that this course is really reduce them to the average hacker that's out playing Presidio.
The British Open, to me, of all of the majors, lacks another element that pulls me to my television. Because golf in HD is pretty. Links-style courses across the pond usually look brown and burnt out like the greens at Bushwood, if you don't mind me saying. So, there's an element of ugliness to the British Open which fails to pull me in a little bit more. Like, I would watch birds fly around Augusta if you gave me, like, overhead tree cams. I would. It's gorgeous.
Oh, I think high definition was made for the Masters tournament. That's how perfectly suited, hand in glove, that tournament is with that technology.
The best, the quintessential moment of high definition television really speaking to you as a sports fan for the first time was when you see that slow-mo bunker shot. It's just sand sprayed everywhere, like a Japanese fan opening. It's just gorgeous. Oh, beautiful.
So, Niners camp opens a week from today. With or without Deebo Samuel and with or without Nick Bosa, we've discussed at some length. And we said earlier this week, Damon, you and I were talking about all the insiders. This is Insiders Week. This has been NFL Insiders Week on 95.7 The Game. We've had a lot of people, some local, some national, come on and give their thoughts heading into camp a week from today, what they think of the Niners. And the expectations to me, what stood out to me is the expectations specifically from the external community seems to be a little higher. Maybe the glass is a little more full than it is from the local community. And we talked about that earlier this week.
The hype coming into last season was legitimate, and it sounded an awful lot like this. And then due to injury, all that hype turned into an awful lot of, you know, crying wolf about a season that was dashed by week three, third quarter, when Jimmy tore his ACL. Like, it was pretty much over right there. So I think people are taking a more cautious approach, rightfully so. Plus, you know what I'm going to feel good about Jimmy Garoppolo? It's not after his first touchdown. It's not after his first win. It's going to be after he gets up after the first splatter hit he takes all season long. I want Garoppolo hit hard, and I want to see him get up from it, not take a mental inventory of what might be wrong with him, but he's just playing football again. He's not thinking about his knee. He's not thinking about his injury. Then I'll feel really good.
So going back to where you were a year ago with some of the expectations as well, it's definitely a fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. You've said a lot this week, banana in the tailpipe. Yeah. I'm going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe with the Niners again.
It wasn't just the banana in the tailpipe. Like, what the Niners, the Niners weren't the banana in the tailpipe. What they were was the banana peel. I mean, they really were. They were the banana peel, and they got so hurt. They were decimated by injury. Defense, whatever improvements were supposed to be made, felt instantly dashed by the Reuben Foster suspension, and the whole thing unraveled real quick, and it disappointed everybody. And I just think that's why there's a more cautious approach this time around. And look, Kyle Shanahan's got people excited.
Got to prove it.
But you got to prove it. Exactly. You know, Bill Walsh was an offensive genius. He took a couple of years and then put it all together and changed football forever. And that's what I think people are looking for from Kyle Shanahan. Like, all right, man, it started off rough. You had a bare cupboard. Your entire team got hurt. Now's time to go. So, man, I understand why the national enthusiasm is more is a little bit louder than locally, because there's a tremendous interest in the 49ers. I mean, this is a brand that the NFL is desirous of seeing rise to the top again. I mean, when the 49ers had their ebb years between Mike Nolan and Jimmy Ray and Mike Singletary coming together, then Jim Harbaugh showed up and reminded everyone what a real monster of a football team meant to this town. And it was like everybody got addicted to that drug again. And then it was pulled from us, and now we haven't even been offered methadone. I mean, we're just asked to go cold turkey year after year after year. And that's what's got a few people cautious. And Jed York isn't someone that people just throw belief in. That's just the way it is.
Well, yeah, and you're right about that, because the Niners are important. And people want the Niners people nationally want the Niners to be good. That's yes. really what it is, because right. they're an important franchise in an important market.
Networks want them to be good.
Peter King wants them to be good.
Yes.
Brian Baldinger wants them to be good. All of the insiders, they want the Niners to be good, because when the Niners are good and they're rolling, it's good for the league as a whole. Just the same way the Cowboys, the same way for the Packers, the same way for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And yes, I know it's been a while, 17 wins over the last four seasons and 10 and 22 for Mike Shanahan. But I would say this real quick, that one of the things that we heard earlier this week was, hey, listen, you want to be playing your best football in December. And it's an old axiom, and it's true, and it's absolutely 100% accurate that you want to be playing your best football in December, hopefully with the idea being that it has some carryover into January, which is where you play in the postseason. But you tell me, getting off to a good start for the first couple of weeks, and just take into account some of these numbers here. 0-8 on the road last year for the Niners. They open up back-to-back road games, one at Tampa, one at Cincinnati. Presumably, those are going to be two 10 a.m. games. Niners 0 for their last 14 on the Eastern time zone.
Yeah.
So you tell me, with the Pittsburgh Steelers then week three into a bye, yes, you want to be playing the most important and the best football into December. Feels like there's a little something to those first couple of weeks, especially just reversing some of the trends that have led to this team being where it's been for the last couple of years.
Look good, feel good, play good. Big formula guy. And the Niners always look good because I love the unis. Feel good. When's the last time this team has felt good? It's been a long time. Getting a little momentum going early in the season, I think, would pay dividends on a young team that needs its confidence to be installed early. Not false bravado, but real confidence that you get when you start stacking wins. Darren, I think it's so important to start at least 1-1 with two beatable, but as you said, road opponents in Eastern time zones. I don't think the 49ers are going to come back to the West Coast once they get to Tampa. I think they go to Tampa, and then they fly to Youngstown, which they have done for the past few years. That's sort of their, we're staying on this side of the country, home away from home, because the Yorks are from Youngstown, and the Niners go and they'll spend a week visiting hospitals, and they've got a very good situation there that they roll into easily. I wouldn't be surprised to see them stay in Youngstown in between the Tampa and Cincinnati game, knowing that you got to be 1-1 there. You do. And then when you come home to Pittsburgh, the Niners have never been good at Levi's Stadium.
Your favorite stadium.
They're not good at Levi's Stadium. They're just not. They don't inspire the people to come on out and make as much noise as possible and have a good time and battle all this traffic to get to, you know, a place that isn't San Francisco as soon as the game's over. Do you really want to go through that? And the answer has been a resounding, not as many as the Niners hope for really, really want to go through that. I mean, there have been a lot of empty seats. With winning, there's no doubt the fans will return. 1-1 on the road and then a flop against Pittsburgh, that's not going to play well out here, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's not at all. It's going to feel a whole bunch of, here we go again.
That's exactly right. Right there. Even if that's not true, even if you can reverse some of those trends heading into the second month of the season, you're giving those who are dubious about this team's chances, who aren't as optimistic as some of the insiders, you're just giving them more fuel. And in the day and age where everybody's on social media and people can claim that they don't hear shows like this and claim that they don't read what's being written about them, there is going to be a sense of deja vu right out of the chute, especially given some of those things that we've just mentioned here. So I know the good start isn't the most important thing in football, but it feels like that in this situation.